This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Listening to the best of the Patriots.
Oh, yeah!
A weekly mix of WEEI's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
All day long here at WEEI, including coming up at 10 with Jones and Keefe, and they will talk with Hunter Henry and Christian Gonzalez. And this afternoon, Drake May on the afternoon show. Right now, though, Boomer Esiason, brought to you this week by McFarland Energy, the region's most dependable provider of home heating oil delivery and expert HVAC services. Find them at McFarlandEnergy.com. By Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh. By Town Fair Tire, for the best prices on tires. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. And Boomer is also brought to you by your New England Kubota tractor dealers. And he joins us right now. Hey, Boomer.
Hey, good morning up there. How are you guys doing? All right?
Well, they hung with them somewhat yesterday, the New England Patriots.
Yeah, you know what? I think you found your quarterback of the future. That's the good news. You know, he's impressing everybody, including Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay. I'm sure you guys saw some of the stuff that they were saying about Drake May after the game.
Yeah.
And it's real. They saw it in real time. They could feel it. You know, watching the game, I never felt like the Patriots were out of the game. I always felt like they were in the game. And then if you play the Rams, the worst possible scenario happened to the New England Patriots. Both of those wide receivers were healthy. Both of those wide receivers were productive. And Matthew Stafford had probably his best game of the year.
This is probably a rookie coach thing, but do you feel like at times Gerard Mayo is too conservative?
You know, he's defensive in nature. Think about that for a second. So this is why. It's not that I'm against defensive head coaches. I'm not. I think they bring a level of intensity to the team. Offensive coaches tend to be a little bit different, depending on who that coach may be. But I do think that young defensive coaches tend to be conservative. There's no question about that. That's not a knock against them. They're learning, too, and he's learning, too. So just like his young quarterback, he also doesn't want to put his young quarterback in a bad situation either. So there's a tendency to be conservative, yes.
Boomer, when you look at yesterday's game, clearly the Rams show you what it's like to have two top-tier receivers. In New England, Drake May needs a guy. It's pathetic when you start to look at the talent he's surrounded with and just how desperate of a need of a wide receiver he is.
Well, Kendrick Bourne, you know, wasn't bad yesterday, I didn't think. And again, you're playing with a rookie quarterback who's experienced a lot of the stuff for the first time, and some rookies handle it better than others, like Bo Nix threw four touchdowns yesterday against an Atlanta team that basically gave up in the middle of the game. But I would say that it's only going to get better for him. He'll make other players better. I can tell that he has that in him, that he is going to elevate the players around him. So I'm sure that they will be looking for a wide receiver this offseason. T. Higgins would be a good target in free agency, I think. You know, if you watched him last night with the Bengals, you could see that he's a top-end wide receiver. I'm sure that you can draft a wide receiver second, third round and get a top-end player as well. I think that's what they've tried to do over the last few years. But, yeah, there's no question. Now comes the hard part. I should say the harder of the, or the easier of the hard parts. And the first part is the quarterback. You got that guy. Now you got to get the team around him. And by the way, finally, an offensive line that actually had two games in a row back-to-back, and maybe that helped as well.
Boomer, when it comes to that final interception for Drake, he said he and DeMario Douglas weren't on the same page. Do you put that blame more on Drake or more on DeMario?
I think it's more on Drake. It's his decision, but it's a learning experience, Courtney. I know people get tired of hearing me saying this, but these kids are realizing things for the first time. They don't realize how good the athletes are in the secondary, how smart they are, how they dupe you into doing things, and they have to learn, and they have to deal through a failure before success, I think. He's had enough success to where his confidence is not lost. That's the thing. Like, when you watch young quarterbacks, you could see guys losing confidence pretty quickly. You could see it in their body language. I don't see that in Drake. At least right now, I don't see it. As a matter of fact, I see the opposite. I see a guy that's engaged on the sideline. I see a guy that's engaged on the field. I see a guy that has gotten a lot out of his teammates. Counter that to a 41-year-old quarterback who's down here in New York, and you watch him, and it looks like he doesn't even want to be here. So I see two ends of the spectrum right now.
Wiggy doesn't want to hear it, but during the Fox halftime show, Howie Long was crediting May sitting the first 5 weeks for how well he is playing now. You agree with that?
Well, if I'm going to be consistent, because I know Wiggy doesn't want to hear this, if I'm going to be consistent, that's exactly what I was saying about Jacoby Brissett starting those first 5 weeks, about how letting him sitting and learning and watching was going to be something that was going to be good for him. He probably didn't like it. I know Wiggy didn't like it, and I'm sure other other fans out there didn't like it. But when I look at this, I see a young quarterback that has no idea what he is stepping into. And even though guys like Bo Nix stepped up and played well, and Cale Williams has had moments, and Jaden Daniels has had his moments, to me, right now, I would put Drake May up there with, I would say, Jaden and Bo Nix, with a really good understanding of what his responsibilities are and how he's supposed to be playing. And I think Cale Williams maybe, came out of his funk yesterday in a loss to the Packers, in which they should have won because he got him into field goal range, and they end up having a field goal attempt blocked.
Boomer, I have to say I thought this was a successful season no matter what if Drake May was good. Yesterday cracked that for me because that was the easiest thing to do. You're sitting at three. You are going to take whichever quarterback landed in your lap. They're lucky. Drake May appears to potentially be the best. Everything else sucks on this team. The way that Jerod Mayo coached yesterday was atrocious. The way the receivers are like shocked to see a football, like it's the first time, like you're chucking an egg at somebody's head. Like it feels like that they have this massive work ahead of them, and I just don't know if I trust Elliott Wolf to be the guy that builds a roster that's capable of winning with Drake May.
Well, we're going to find out, man. All I can tell you is that, man, you sound just like a Giant and Jet fan. It's amazing. I feel like I've been going through psychosis with all these different fan bases. I will say that, yes, they got a lot of building to do. There's no question about it, especially on the offensive side of the ball. The one thing I can't dispute, though, I can't dispute the intensity, the competition level. I can't dispute that. I can dispute the lack of playmakers and the fact that they have to rebuild this roster. There's no question about that. And like I said, the hard part's done. The quarterback's there. Now they got to build around him. And I know it's hard to go through this season, but openly and honestly, week one, we talked about what the expectations were for the Patriots, and this was after they beat the Bengals. And I still said that I didn't think that they were a playoff team. I think it's going to be a long year, and there's going to be a lot of headache and heartache going through this year. So I'm not surprised by any of this. And this will be Elliott Wolf's, crowning achievement, or he'll be looking for another job this time next year.
Well, once again, there will not be an undefeated season for the Kansas City Chiefs. And you look at the AFC Championship game, if it ends up being those two, has your mind changed at all about who wins it?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, Josh Allen's amazing. He really is. It depends, I think, where that game is going to be played. Now, Patrick wins in the playoffs. Josh wins in the regular season when these two teams meet. But I do think that Josh Allen's a very special player. You know, he was playing without his two top wide receivers yesterday. You could see what he could do when he starts running the ball all over the place. I just think he's so special. I think Patrick's special, too, don't get me wrong. But Josh really elevated his game yesterday. I hope, well, you know, listen, I hope the Bengals make it because I think they're a really exciting team. They're not out of it yet. They're 4-7. But those two quarterbacks on the field in an AFC championship game is a dream come true for CBS. There's no question about it.
Well, Boomer, you remember, you and Howie are from a different era of football. You guys sat for years and years before you got playing time. So when you think of the Cincinnati Bengals, I always say this, Ja'Marr Chase. I don't know if you saw what he said after the game. There's no way that he and Zach Taylor could potentially be there next year. So do you? I asked the question, is there any chance Cincinnati moves on from this guy, or do we see potentially a new head coach in Cincinnati?
I personally don't see it. That's not the Brown family way of doing things. They're the ones who own the Cincinnati Bengals. I think they'll give Ja'Marr Chase the huge contract he's going to deserve. I think T. Higgins is going to move on via free agency because they won't play both wide receivers. I do believe that Joe Burrow loves Zach Taylor. Their defense has really fallen apart this year. That's how I would put it for them. Their offense has been great, but their defense has been really, really suspect, especially their pass defense. So I think it's one side of the ball. I think that they're going to have to redo their defense in some way, shape, or form next year. They're going to have to either add or, you know, do something in the draft where a lot of it's going to be defensive players. Their offense is really good. I mean, their offensive line, by the way, is like bottom third in the NFL, and Joe Burrow still puts up these crazy numbers. So I think Zach Taylor's still there next year. I personally would endorse him to stay there. I just think their defense has been a disaster.
Question of the week for Boomer Esiason, brought to you by McFarland Energy, the region's most dependable provider of home heating oil delivery and expert HVAC services. Find them at McFarlandEnergy.com. Does Doug Peterson survive the day? And if not, due to his relationship with the GM, if the GM survives, is that a Bill Belichick destination?
You know what? Shad Khan is a big money guy. They're building a new stadium down there. I could see him going any which way. I wouldn't surprise me if Doug ended up losing his job today. I mean, that was a disgrace yesterday. And I know that they were playing with their backup quarterback, and Mac Jones was horrendous. And Detroit steamrolling everybody, by the way. So that wasn't surprising. But I would not, if you told me today that Shad Khan decided Doug Peterson and or Trent Baalke are out, it would not surprise me at all.
Can I just ask a blanket question? Because what's going on with the kickers across the league, especially the AFC North? Is it a talent thing? It feels like kickers are just not what they used to be.
Well, Chris Boswell kicked six field goals yesterday, and that was a hell of a game between the Steelers and the Ravens. And Evan McPherson was terrible at the end of the game for the Bengals. He had an opportunity to get them, you know, obviously they could have won the game had he made a couple of his field goals, but I don't know. It's a weird thing, Courtney. I think it just goes, you know, it's cyclical. You know, the one thing I will say, a lot of these kickers are booming 50-yard or more kicks like with regularity now, which I didn't, you know, we didn't see that back in the day. It was maybe one or two kickers across the league that can hit those kicks. Now it seems like every team has a guy that can actually hit a 55 or 60-yarder to win the game.
Except for New England.
Yeah.
you guys had, for 20 years, you guys had everything. Man, 20 years, you had the coach, the quarterback, the kickers. You had the defensive Hall of Famers. You had everything. And now all of a sudden, you're all complaining after 3 years.
I was just going to just end with this simple one. Where do you think the Brady-Mahomes battle is today? It's been something that percolated on local radio here in Boston last week. Obviously, Mahomes has three. How many titles do you think Mahomes needs to actually be in the conversation as the potential GOAT at quarterback?
Well, I mean, if we're going to do that, I would say at least three more. You know, and he could get three more. I mean, you know, he's young enough and he's vibrant enough that could happen. I could see that. And he's got a great coach. And it reminds me a lot of the Patriot dynasty. When you think about it, when you think about him and Andy Reid together and everything that they've done and kind of like what they've gone through in terms of their roster development, how the defense has taken over the last couple of years, you know, they're going to have to get him some more offensive playmakers. But I would say maybe three more before we get to that to that level of brilliance and greatness of Tom Brady?
Boomer, as always, great having you on. Just like your quarterback down there, there were a lot of questions, and you didn't throw any of them away. So we really appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Man, this is a long season, isn't it, guys? God, I can't wait to get over with.
Is he there next year? That's what I want to know.
You know, that's a good question. The salary cap and the contract tells me yes. The question is, who is the coach? I want John Gruden to coach here. I really do.
Yeah,
I really do. I mean, they need a personality. The Jets, you know, when they were really good, they had Rex Ryan. He was a personality. I know he's a pain in the ass to everybody else. But here in New York, he was a personality. He gave that team some life. He gave that team a leadership. I think John Gruden would do that. Now, the question is would Aaron Rodgers and John Gruden work together? That would be interesting.
Oh, unbelievable.
I would love that for radio.
Yeah, it'd be great for you, right?
Yes,
great for all of us. All right, thanks, Boomer.
Have a great week, guys.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by the 99. We have some breaking news this morning. The Giants have benched Daniel Jones. So Drew Lock and Tommy DeVito are the backups, but the Giants are opting for DeVito, according to Adam Schefter.
All right.
Cutlets.
Cutlets.
Where's that agent in that god-awful outfit?
Sean Stellato.
Sean's going to be everywhere. New Louboutins for him.
Best chicken parm in Boston, Greg.
My opinion has changed recently. We had an unbelievable one at Basic Brunch at Strega.
Yep.
Because it had the vodka sauce.
Which I prefer.
The creamy tomato vodka sauce.
Yes. I'm with you.
Wiggs, you're the Italian here.
Well, there's two ways to think. Are we talking chicken palm dinner or chicken palm sub?
Dinner. Mm. Or whichever you want to eat. It's up
all
to
right.
you.
Strega does have a good one.
Aria has a good one.
They have a good one. Aria does have a good one. What's that restaurant?
Floramos?
No, on the corner. Florentine. Is that the name of it?
Cafe Florentine?
No, La Familia. Is it La Familia? On the corner of Hanover and Prince.
I don't know.
I think it's across from... Bencato, which has a good one. It's right on. They got giant.
Bonza?
No,
oh, you're thinking of Cantina Italiana?
No, it's like, I think it's, begins with an F.
Familia?
Familia. That's what I think it is. It's right on the corner. Okay. They got giant portion. They got a good one.
Well, the Patriots fall to the Rams 28-22. Drake May completed 30 of 40 passes for 282 yards for two touchdowns. He had an interception in this one. We're going to talk to Jerod Mayo this morning in the 9 o'clock hour. No more teams with the potential for a perfect season. The Chiefs fall to the Bills in Buffalo 30-21, the final. When it comes to rivalry games, the Steelers beat the Ravens 18-16 in Pittsburgh. And tonight it's Texans at Cowboys. Kickoff at 8:15. You can listen to that right here on WEEI. The Celtics beat the Raptors on a Tatum buzzer beater on Saturday. Final score 125-123. They have the Cavs in town tomorrow night for the NBA Cup. That's before they have their trip to the White House on Thursday to celebrate their championship win. And the Bruins are in action tonight, taking on the Blue Jackets at the TD Garden. Puck drop at 7. And cozy up to irresistible new fall flavors at the 99 restaurant, like the freshly baked homestyle chicken pot pie packed with chicken and topped with a buttery flaky crust, or the creamy short rib mac and cheese. You gotta love the nines.
I think I know the answer to this, Curtis, but anybody on that Celtics team that does the Trump dance at the White House? Or maybe Luke Cornett? I mean,
everybody's
he's
doing
a funny,
the dance.
He's a funny guy.
I got to be honest. I think Biden does the Trump dance.
If I was going to give it to anybody, like the jokester, probably might be your boy Pete Pritch.
Okay.
I could see him doing
it. Do we see Pags doing it on the White House lawn?
I don't know about Pags if he's a jokester.
Yeah.
45 degrees right now in Boston, afternoon high around 60.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Tommy Curran, how are we doing this week?
Hello, fellas.
Hello.
I'm looking at your tears right now.
Oh, good. Oh, what do you think? How do you feel about that? Stand By Me is at the top because that was Christian Gonzalez's. I know you're an insider and you know everything that's going on with the team. We were able to suss that out of him yesterday. His favorite movie is Stand By Me. So that's why that's at the top.
Okay, fair.
How do you feel about the tears otherwise? It seems like you're not loving them if I'm reacting in real time.
No, they're fine. No. They're good. It's very interesting because I talked to a kid, Ben Baldwin, who does the tears, but he uses Pro Football Focus and also a lot of his own analysis. I'm going to have a conversation with him on my pod. And I made the point this week that the Patriots are now sniffing around the hindquarters of mediocrity. They're still a bad team. Don't make that mistake. Don't you do it. But they are sniffing around the hindquarters of mediocrity, having gone 2-2 in their last four, and actually being in a position where they could have won the four games realistically.
Yeah, well, so that's why we put him in the red zone tier, Tom.
Yeah.
I think we're
some entertainment value there.
Yeah, we're a little more gut reaction than Pro Football Focus rankings or anything like that, but that's why we put him there. But I was going to reference your column this week, and you just laid it out pretty nicely. Your point, though, is not only are they sniffing at the hindquarters of mediocrity, but that also raises the stake and, you know, puts a bigger target on some of the issues and second guesses that you may have for the coaching staff. So what jumped out to you in that regard this week?
I guess what jumped out to me was the lack of a consistent philosophy that we're seeing from the Patriots, unfortunately. You know, what do you want to be? Who do you want to be? If you want to be a team that gambles, well, then I would say being in a, you know, 7-0 game or whatever, or 10, whatever the score was when they allowed the zero blitz to get past, the risk reward in that, that Mayo talked about on Monday. So the risk in that is a touchdown, which is what happened. The reward is either a sack, an incompletion, or an interception, which probably isn't going to be a pick six. So is that risk worth the reward? No, it's not. It's a 16-year veteran thrown to an all-pro wide receiver, and you had evidence from week two that even a decent quarterback in Geno Smith will find his all-pro wide receiver and beat you if you leave it open in that way. That's the reason the Patriots really lost that Seattle game, and it's largely the reason that they lost this game against the Rams. You can't lose it all on one play in the first half. And there's, you know, people say, oh, there's a million plays after that. A lot traces back to that. But if you're going to put that kind of risk on something, shouldn't you on inside the five with an opportunity to narrow the gap with the Rams in the third quarter, instead of running Ramondre Stevenson once into the line, twice into the line, and then kicking a field goal, get your athletic quarterback out on the edge on fourth down perhaps, or maybe even on third down when everybody on the planet knows that the Rams are going to stuff that run, and try and make some kind of a play with him where it's run-pass option. So to me, I don't see a cogent, we're aggressive, we're not aggressive. And I'm going to keep babbling here because I thought this was interesting. Remember in 2022 when the Lions came in here and they lost 29-0?
Yeah, and they went for it on fourth down like 8 billion times.
Yep,
yeah, yeah.
Seven times. They were 0 for friggin' 7. Wow. They went for it on 4th-and-9. They were constantly in the Patriots' end of the field. Dan Campbell later explained, that's who we are, that's how we're going to play. Well, that's who they are now, too, and they're probably the best team in football, at least as they're performing right now.
Yeah, you know, I brought up there was an example from Dan Campbell's first year, and I think it might have been Joe Judge's first or second year with the Giants, and it was on the same day where, you know, neither team had barely won any games, and it was third and 20, and Joe Judge ran like a QB keeper to like get a little bit more room to punt. Meanwhile, you flip over to the Lions game, same situation. It was like double reverse flea flicker pass to like a tackle. And you're like, look at these guys. And like they both ended with like 3 or 4 wins. But after watching Sunday's game with the Patriots and the Rams, I'm thinking, man, Gerard Mayo's a lot closer to Joe Judge than he is Dan Campbell.
And it's interesting because if you look at the way that Bill did things, he got to the Patriots with 25 years of head coaching experience. He came with Ernie Adams, his prep school pal, who shared a brain with him and a philosophical brain and could scout teams in a way that was more granular than anybody on the Patriots staff. He came with Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel, and they developed Josh McDaniels. So the point I'm making is, in a game, Bill could be more malleable in addition because he had a better team, but because he knew that everyone around him shared the same philosophy. Mayo is now in his first year as a head coach, his sixth year as a coach. He is attached to Evan Rothstein, who might be talented, might not be talented, no one knows. But he is his main conciliary in terms of game situations. And he's attached to Alex Van Pelt, who might be trying to, you know, at the same time he's developing and showing some aggressiveness, also has the roots of, I don't want to screw this up here either, in his past. And you have DeMarcus Covington, who's spinning the wheel and trying to be aggressive like, you know, Bill could be, or Steve Belichick could be, or Mayo could be, or Flores could be. But he's also got Matt Patricia having worked with him, too. So, like, you never know what you're going to get. You never know what you're going to get. And I think that, as Phil Perry said, and it's not his quote, but if you're going to be a Bear, be a Grizzly. And I think the Patriots at 3-8 should decide to be a Grizzly. Don't friggin' not go for two.
Yeah, they're playing like
the
a sun bear.
Tennessee.
Sun bears are the smallest bears. Ahead, that's what they're playing like. They're playing like a sun bear.
I'm riled up.
No, you should be.
A koala bear.
Well, so you're about to get into it there, Tom. There's three three decisions we talked about a lot yesterday on the show, and it was not kicking a 54-yard field goal. It was
didn't hate that.
So just because of the wind or because of Sly, why didn't you hate that one?
So early in the game, do you really want to give Matt Stafford? It was a 51-49 thing. I was like, kick it. No, you don't want to kick it? All right, well, Barrage will have a nice punt. Well, he didn't.
No, he didn't. That's true. That makes it look a lot worse.
He didn't.
The fourth
net 22 on the punt.
Fourth and goal from the two. That one's pretty egregious.
That bothered me a great deal.
Okay, same. And then the other one was not having them re-punt to Marcus Jones and being like, well, we got it at the 10. Could be a lot worse than the 10. I'm like, could it be? Like, the 10's not great.
I honestly, that one slipped through my fingers, and I forgot about that because I looked at it like, what? They just ran down the field, too.
Yeah.
They're tuckered.
They were tuckered. Yeah, good point.
So, those were decisions that absolutely deserve scrutiny, but again, you can go to the scheme decisions. There's different decisions. There's scheme decisions and game plan decisions, and there's situational decisions, and I think that the Patriots when they make a game plan or scheme decision, I feel less inclined to criticize because there's information that they have at their disposal that we might not know. But in game decisions and innovation within the game, I don't mind second guessing. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to run a 4th-and-1 trick play, you want to put Jalen Polk on the friggin' field? And Javon Baker?
Let me just back it up. Let me just back it up. You're going to run a play. I don't want Jalen Polk on the seriously. Field. Never mind trick plays. Yeah.
He has twice as many penalties as he does catches since the month of September.
Yikes.
So stop it. Why would you do that? That's a bad decision in the game, in the course of the game. If you want Christian Gonzalez to not shadow Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp because of something you see in your scheme that you think your fellas are going to be overmatched if you don't do it that way, it didn't work out, but I'm not sure it would have worked out better if you did it the other way. So I get it. You know what I'm saying? That's the stuff that bothers me. Like the 80-20 stuff, like having Jalen Polk on the field, what's the likelihood they're going to execute that? The most important low. Play in the friggin' game.
Yeah.
So stop it.
Yeah, I would say low. He's Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joins us every Tuesday on a Tommy Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe. I think you already answered this, but I'm going to ask you again. Your Flex of the Week brought to you by FlexCar. Ditch the dealership and save thousands with FlexCar. It sounded like your Flex of the Game was the Cooper Kupp touchdown second play of the second half.
Well, I like to go with the Patriots flex.
Nice. This is why I should ask and not editorialize. Yeah. What was it?
No, I love that because we have an open forum here between us, and I think that we all share kind of a brain in the way we look at the game. Mm-hmm. We might have different opinions on it, but I think that we all see it the same way to a degree. But anyway, I like that one. But I'm going to look at the Patriots and say the flex of the game was Drake May on the first series of the game, seeing a safety blitz addressing it and throwing to the player in the perfect spot, reading, diagnosing, throwing it. 30 for 40 for 282 with three drops. He's just really friggin' good, and he gets no protection, and it's pretty astounding how well he's playing, and it's more than a snapshot now. So that would be my flex of the game. What did you guys think of the pick?
Oh,
I think everybody put it on DeMario Douglas.
I think that was on May.
I do too. You're a former college wide receiver.
That's right.
Rich Keith.
You got to catch everything. That's my philosophy. But no, that was behind
him. Douglas,
that was behind him.
There was nothing but green grass ahead of him.
Yeah. No, he hits him in stride, and who knows what's going to happen on that play. So, yeah, no, that was on Drake May. But I think most people are to the point where, you know, he can finish the game that way, but you still look at him like, oh, man, this guy's better than I thought. Like, look at the fun that he's sort of brought to the table. Clearly, the turnovers are the one major thing in his game that he has to get cleaned up, right? Like, everything else, I know coming into the league, people are like, oh, his footwork is this and that. I'm like, I don't know. Looks pretty good now. He's able to get in and out of the pocket. He hits guys in the hands. They might catch it. They might not catch it. But it is just some of these turnovers, which I think you see with almost every rookie quarterback.
The only turnover, and we can look at the Chicago turnover, but after we hear his explanation, he was trying to throw it out of bounds, and it didn't get there. So he wasn't intending to throw it into a team meeting. So that one I look at and say, let's just throw it out of bounds, you dummy. Mm-hmm. But the only one he looked truly like a rookie, didn't know what he was looking at. Like, the only one he didn't know what he was looking at was, who the hell did he throw it over the middle to? Houston?
Houston, he had some bad picks in his first start.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one was a bad one. The one down the middle where he, Polk, surprise, got under Pat. That was a pick. But I look at all the picks differently and say, okay, well, it's a downfield throw in the last drive of the game. You don't want that. You want to try and win the game. It's the one thing you can't do at that point. But he's not confused. He's not Sam Darnold seeing mm-hmm. ghosts. He's not running around with no concept of what he wants to do, a la Tony Richardson, Anthony. I keep calling him Tony, the old Kansas City fullback.
Yeah, he's a Pro Bowler, that guy.
Yeah, nice player.
He's real nice.
Yeah.
But he's a good player. He's fun to watch.
Tom, I'm curious. I know Andy and Christian asked you about this last week. Is Alex Van Pelt safe?
I think so. Based on the returns that he has given through this portion of the season. Yeah, he's developed May. We've talked about it. They've talked about it. I do think that the onus is on the Crafts that every single day they show up, figure out how to make their team better. I looked at it today. The top five salaries among quarterbacks belong to Trevor Lawrence, Dak Prescott, Tua Tagovailoa, and Joe Burrow. And then there's a Jordan Love thrown in there. The combined record between those five teams is 19-44. They're all making $53 million average APY or above. So the bottom line that I'm trying to make is you got to get the most out of May by the time he is a fifth-year player and you start paying through the friggin' nose. So everybody has to be good right now. So I don't blame the Patriots or ownership for scrutinizing that and trying to decide, do we want Alex Van Pelt to be the guy who leads us going forward? And I think that by the end of the year, we'll conclude, yeah, he's going to be the guy.
You know, the Tyquan Thornton era came to an end, and you know, he's one of those guys. He's an example where very early in his tenure, there were a lot of people being like, oh, this ain't it, and it's going to be a bust. And you'd have pushback say, oh, it's too early to call him a bust. And then he ended up being a bust.
Me too.
You know, N'Keal Harry, same thing. N'Keal Harry, early on, there were people saying bust. Like, oh, hold, let's give him a minute. Nope, he was actually a bust. So I circle all the way back to Jalen Polk. It's very, very early in his career, but he's actually trending even in a worse path than Tyquan Thornton and N'Keal Harry, it feels like.
Yeah, it 1,000,000% does. The difference may be that they have Drake May at quarterback, and he's young, and he's in the same draft class, and it could help.
Yep.
Let me just roll through for the hell of it. Second round picks like Tyquan Thornton.
Yeah. Holy mackerel. Yeah. What a group.
Jordan Richards in 2015, Cyrus Jones in 2016, Duke Dawson in 2018. They didn't have one. Jawan Williams in 2019, Kyle Duggar and Josh Uche in 2020, Christian Barmore in 21, Tyquan Thornton in 22, and Keon White in 23.
No, it's wideouts and corners. Don't draft wideouts and corners. Anywhere else, you're all right. Like, you can go all the way back to
round three?
No.
No, come on.
Go ahead.
Geno Grissom, Joe Tooney, Jacoby Brissett.
Grissom, yeah, right. Joe Tooney,
nice player.
Brissett, week one
starter. Rivers, Antonio Garcia.
No, less so.
Rivers, Antonio Garcia. Oh, Chase Winovich.
No.
Damian Harris, Yadni Kajust.
Not great.
Anthony Jennings, Devin Asiasi, and Dalton Keene. Ronnie Perkins. Marcus Jones, and Marte Mapu.
I like Marcus Jones.
I'm not even get into the first rounders, which would begin with Malcolm Brown in 2015. It's just a low yield from the top of your draft.
Low yield is
the
main
reason why you're a bad team.
There is absolutely a low yield from the top of the draft.
Oh, I saw a wild stat. You want to hear this stat?
Oh, sure.
I saw that thing. The Pro Bowl one?
Yeah, somebody made a graphic. I don't even know who it is. Pick'em? I don't know what it is.
NFL Pick'em.
NFL Pick'em. Draft picks that became Pro Bowlers since 2014.
Mm.
So 10 years, your draft picks, what percent made the Pro Bowl? Do you want to take a stab at what percent?
10%.
For the Patriots.
3.8 for the Patriots.
3.3, which ranks where, Jones?
Oh, that's got to be 32.
32nd. 32nd. The Lions, 19.8% of their draft picks become Pro Bowlers. I mean, that's insane. I don't think you could expect 20%. 10% is more kind of in the air. 8% would be good. 3.3%.
Yeah, not great. So, but Tom, I would say.
And that's all Joe Tooney and Mac Jones. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
Mac Jones, that's right. True. It shouldn't even count.
Mac Jones should not count. But what's most disconcerting is that a lot of that's Bill, and Bill did not draft well, and I don't think anybody's arguing that. The problem is, outside of Drake May, it looks like that's continuing with this year's draft class. I know it's early to just shut it down, but it looks like it's continuing. That's what's terrifying. I blame Bill for all those drafts, but it might not have just been Bill. It might have been Groh and Wolf, too.
1,000,000%. They have skated, and I don't think the early returns on their command of what they're looking at is great. I mean, this was Tyquan Thornton was drafted, and Matt Groh said, if you want to get faster, get fast players. Well, you could have, drafted Skeets Nehemiah. I don't even know who the sprinters are anymore.
Who's the YouTuber who raced?
Donovan Bailey.
No. I love Houston speed or something McCare. Like that. Yeah, who is that guy?
Oh, yeah, that guy. I'm sure he's got
you
good
content.
You
guys don't know Houston McTare, do you?
Nope. No, Houston I'm out, McTare, on, out no. on that one. Dump it.
I need
Houston McTare was a sprinter in the late 70s.
Uh-huh.
All right, I'm going to send you that. I'm going to send you Houston McTare.
Okay. No, I'm more
I'll send
like
you I Show Speed on YouTube.
Carl Lewis. Yeah. I can get you there. Michael Johnson was very fast.
Oh, yeah.
Otto Bolden.
The guy? Began with a Q.
Oh, I don't know that guy. Q? There's a bunch of sprints for a while. Yeah, the 100-meter dash was where it was at for a while.
Oh, are you thinking of Theo from The Challenge? He was a British sprinter. Is that who you're thinking of?
No.
No, you idiot.
No.
All right, I'm going to find Quentin. All right, bye.
Let us know. Thank you very much, Tom.
Oh, bye. Okay. Tom, we'll talk to you soon, Tom. Thanks
so
much.
Tommy,
you knew it.
Go on a high note.
Pull the ripcord.
I got to go. I'm out of here. I got to see you later, Mike. I got an appointment.
You know what? I don't mind that. More guests should do that. You say, okay, I'm out. I'm done. We're done here. I've got nothing else to bring to the table.
Jerod Mayo postgame. That quote made the rounds for sure, as a lot of people heard it and thought, what is he talking about? And I just noticed this now. Kind of went over my head the first couple times I heard it, but he's like I said in the locker room. Said that in the locker room?
Apparently.
You said, hey, guys, we really controlled that game out there. Like, I understand, you want to try and soften the blow. It was a one-score game. And listen, all in all, in the totality of everything that happened yesterday, I can live with a loss like that. I can. I didn't expect him to win a lot of games this year. I didn't expect him to win that game. I didn't even really expect him to get within one score. I can live with a loss like that. You don't want to lose, but that's acceptable to me. You know, a one-score loss where you fought till the end and, your defense had some problems, but then they were able to kind of sack up at the end there. Same with the offense. I mean, the offense wasn't great all game either, but they made plays at certain points when it counted to keep themselves alive, and it was never really a blowout or anything like that. Like, I can live with that. You know, we talked about different kinds of losses. Like, that's the type of loss I can tolerate. That, the Seattle game, close ones, where you were competitive and you hung around. They were competitive in that game. But you controlled the game? We controlled the game? You didn't control the game. You held the ball longer because they were scoring quickly, but that's not controlling the game. That is a wild way of looking at it. And I don't know. I wonder how that landed in the locker room. I wonder how they sort of heard that and were like, yeah, like on offense, do you think they were thinking, yeah, we really controlled that game? You didn't. You put up 22 points, which is more than you usually do, and you did have the ball for a long time. But do you think the defense felt that way? You think the defense felt like, yeah, we were really in control in this game? They couldn't have felt that way, could they?
And I do wonder, like you said, how it was received. Because when you address any large group of people, employees, students, whatever, some are going to roll their eyes at what you say for whatever reason.
Right.
And that feels like a little bit of a potential eye roll moment. Because if I'm a veteran. Devon Godshaw, although he made some weird comments about, like, he thought they were better than the Rams and we have more talent and whatever. And I'm like,
okay.
What roster you look? Because I think the Rams are the far better team with talent, like quarterback, wide receivers, defensive front. Like, I think totality, the Rams are a more talented team. They certainly have the better coaching staff and more proven scheme and McVay and everything they did there. You just heard John Jones kind of rave about it and the way they move things around and make it tough to cover those guys and challenge a defense. But to say you controlled the game in a game where you blitzed, couldn't get there, and you gave up a 69-yard touchdown. Okay, say that maybe that's true. You controlled everything else, and they hit a one-off. Well, they got a strip sack on you and scored immediately. Okay, there's two portions there where it feels like you didn't really control the game. If anything, I thought that's when it was really going to go sideways for him after the strip sack and immediate touchdown. That felt like a real momentum swing. But, I mean, Matthew Stafford was kind of having fun out there, it seemed like. Like, he seemed to really enjoy his performance. And when you have two receivers with, you know, 100 yards each and get them into the end zone and you have four touchdowns, probably a reason why you're having fun. You're jogging down the field, essentially mocking the other team by like, did they really zero blitz me? Matthew Stafford, Hall of Fame quarterback? I can and I have those receivers.
He was tearing the blitz apart all through the first half, too. I mean, that's the book on him. Matthew Stafford's not some rookie. He's not some guy that you don't have any tape on. Like, you know you're not supposed to blitz him like that. And I think that they felt Here's my just sort of random take on it without knowing any real inside information. But if I'm looking at this through the lens of how they game planned and how they schemed everything, it's almost like Mayo said, you know, that blitz really worked against Chicago. Let's just keep doing it. You know, let's just see if that works here. And even in the first half, after you see it's not working, I mean, he's in that second quarter, he was getting whatever he wanted to, and the blitz wasn't getting there and never got there, and they just start off the second half doing it again like that. You know, like, you reap what you sow eventually. Like, you have to understand that that's not working, and it wasn't working at all, and it's not the team that you try and do that against. I just feel like they think they're out of options. They're limited in the ways that they can attack some of these offenses, especially ones with savvy veteran quarterbacks and good wide receivers. It's not an easy task for them.
But I'm failing to sort of tie this all together. So fourth and goal from the two, you don't go for it.
Nope.
But Matthew Stafford, you say, I'm going to go zero blitz and see if we can get there and hope that he doesn't hit one of his all-pro caliber receivers down the field. Like, there's just an inconsistency to the way this all kind of comes together week to week. Even the game plan thing, you said. You have said you're a game plan team, just like Belichick was. So week to week, we're going to change things dramatically based on the opponent to do what we think is best to beat that opponent. And yet you felt you could beat Matthew Stafford the same way you beat Caleb Williams. You could beat the Rams the same way you beat the Bears offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that makes no sense to me. They're totally different. I mean, is Sean McVay going to be fired this week? No, he's not going to be. Shane Waldron, my buddy, love him, mean it, but he got fired after that performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't – that carryover idea makes no sense to me, especially when I feel like it's kind of a outlier idea.
Yeah.
I mean, the simplest idea when you have a number one corner is tell him to cover that guy and just point at whoever you think is the most dangerous on the other team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why would you go back-to-back week outlier? It's like overthinking. I don't even know what to make of it, but it didn't work. They didn't adjust, and Gerard Mayo then goes in the locker room, and I don't – maybe he was trying to say we did some good things today or there were times in this game where we played well enough to win. To me, those are true, if you phrase it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But to say you felt like you controlled the game, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Makes no sense to me. Offensively, maybe for like a quarter, you controlled the game. That's about it. Mm-hmm. On one side of the ball, for like a quarter, you may have controlled the game. But everything else, all three phases, it was at best competitive, and at worst, they controlled the game.
Yeah.
In some of the things they were able to do. So it's another one of those where not only does he say too much sometimes, he just flat out says the wrong thing.
Yeah. I mean, that happens. It's happened a lot this year, to be sure.
Too much.
And I think that with Mayo, identity is big for him, right? Like, this is our identity. This is what we're going to do. He said it from the beginning of the year. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play defense. We're going to win games that way. Blah, you know, like, this is us.
So go forward on fourth and goal for
like,
two.
What was the old defensive coordinator on the Steelers with the 3-4?
Dick LeBeau.
Dick LeBeau, right. Yeah, exactly. Like, he was like, this is our defense. We're going to come out here and do it. This is how we execute.
Blitzburg zone blitz and everything.
And listen, Dick LeBeau is a legend in football, obviously.
Yeah, but then he would blitz.
Right. So
at least he stuck to it. This is a team that wants to run the ball, play defense, be physical, tough, control the line of scrimmage. How many times have we heard that?
Mm-hmm. We've heard it a lot.
And you can't go for it on fourth and goal?
No, you can't.
Because your defense, if you're a defensive team, if you go for it on fourth and goal, where does the offense take over when you don't get it?
Right there.
Right. So you trust your defense. Mm-hmm. Control the line of scrimmage. Like, you're controlling the game. You just told me you're controlling the game. If you're truly controlling the game, then you control the offensive line of scrimmage and score. Woohoo! If that doesn't happen, no big deal. We're controlling the game. We'll control the defensive line of scrimmage. They'll punt out of their own end zone. Mm-hmm. We'll take over at midfield.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. There is an inconsistency in the layering of their identity or how they approach things or who they want to be that I don't know why that is, especially when he is a CEO head coach.
Yeah.
He's not so busy running the offense that he gets lost in the offense.
Yeah.
He's not so busy running the defense that he gets lost in the defense. He's supposed to be kind of
in charge of the vibes.
Yeah, pulling it all together, right?
Yeah.
And it is poorly pulled together.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's an element of stubbornness to it, which is sort of the LeBeau point I was making there, is that he sort of thinks, yeah, you know what? We're going to create this identity for ourselves. We're going to stick to it. And even if it's not working, we'll do it until it works. And I think that's part of why you didn't see Christian Gonzalez shading Nacua or Cooper Kupp. And I think that's part of the reason why you saw them keep blitzing, even though it wasn't working. They were getting shredded. I think that's part of it. Like, hey, this is what we do. We're going to go out there and do it, and we'll make them adjust. And then when they adjust, you don't have a follow-up for it, is what it seems like. We just asked Jonathan Jones about the halftime adjustments. He said we didn't really make halftime adjustments.
Yeah.
You know, like, what does that tell you? They gave up 3 touchdowns in the second quarter, and you don't make any adjustments? Well, it's not really about the adjustments to what they're doing. Well, it should be. You know, that should be something that you maybe emphasize a little bit. I was shocked to hear that answer. And I know it's not exactly what he said, but, like, that was the gist of it.
Sort of the implication.
He's like, yeah, you know, it wasn't really about making adjustments at the half. And it's like, well, okay, I guess we saw that because coming out of the half, you blitzed everybody and they scored a 70-yard touchdown. So, you know, yeah, I guess you're right. You didn't make adjustments.
Well, and that's where he falls back on, and I know every coach does, execution, right? We didn't execute well enough. We need to execute. Sometimes you can't execute better, right? Like, I don't know how much better they can blitz, how much more often they're going to get there, how much better their pass rush can execute. Sometimes you're just limited by talent and ability, right, and makeup. And isn't that where coaches come in to try to cut a corner, find an advantage, find some way, scheme something up.
Mine for some kind of advantage that you have.
And I think they've done that too much this year. Even going all the way back to the beginning of the season, DeMarcus Covington on back-to-back week said, it's not really about scheme, it's about players executing. Well, if the players can't execute what you're telling them to do, that might be on you. Mm-hmm. You might be asking them to do things they're not capable of, right? They can't do well enough. So then it is on you to find a way to create a scheme or a game plan where they can, therefore, execute. So the defense I told you coming in I thought was overrated, but it's more overrated than I thought it was.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a very good defense right now.
No, it doesn't look that way. Certainly not against good teams and good offense.
9 sacks. Woohoo!
617-779-7937 if you'd like to chime in here. The Andy Hart plan, which we've heard all about since before the season
not
even started,
this one.
Really. The Andy Hart plan has a new feature to it, and it involves a disgruntled Cincinnati wide receiver, maybe not the one that you're thinking of, but we'll get to that. If you heard, listen to the Six Rings post-game show, which I actually missed it yesterday. It's the first week all year
doing?
That I missed it. It's my wife's birthday. I couldn't.
So?
So I couldn't listen to it.
You couldn't put us on in the background?
No, I couldn't.
We are very romantic.
No, I had to put on Sade. You know, a little
nice, Barry White instead.
Yeah, hey, listen, you know how it goes. Anyway, if you heard it, you already know about this, but if not, we'll get to the Andy Hart plan right after Stiz gets you caught up on what's trending.
It is a Tie Tuesday, and Tie Law brought to you this week by Corvus Vodka, the official vodka of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and by 110 Grill. Gluten-free dining done right. Tie Law is here. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Great to have you. By the way, it's a Timeout Tuesday, and there's food here, so help yourself. Courtney and I tried during the break
the fried grilled cheese sandwich with tomato, creamy tomato soup sauce.
Mm.
This is from Polenta, which is the newest Italian kitchen at Time Out Market Boston, and it is, it's to die for.
The epitome of a comfort meal was just on my plate. Really? It was unbelievable.
I try to get a little piece of it, but between you and Greg, it was like
gone.
Two lions.
Gone. Were what, did you, what did you try? The
so
chicken palm?
I tried the chicken palm, and then they had like a little, like this like prosciutto kind of like panini sandwich that was really good. So
unbelievable.
Yeah.
So from seasonal polenta creations to wild game bolognese, their dishes showcase fresh ingredients and bold flavors. And if you are caller number 9 right now, oh no, well it says that right on the bottom of the thing.
I was told
at me like
I was told we didn't have something to give away. Well, maybe, I'll double check.
Should you? Maybe you should remove that from the copy.
I also wasn't sent the copy.
As the producer of the radio show before you're wildly waving your hands.
Apologies. I just copy and pasted from the email.
I just read what's on the paper. Like
yes,
Ron
and
Burgundy.
You do a great job at that.
Okay. Can I get us away from this quickly?
Yes.
So if you, it's going to be in the 40s this weekend. No better place, especially with little kids running around, than Time Out Market. Food for everybody. Parking's right underneath. You can get it validated, and there's like 15 restaurants.
It is a great take.
Yep.
All right. Ty.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the New England Patriots and what occurred on Sunday.
So I'll say it again. I know it's getting a little repetitive, but I like our quarterback. Let's give compliments first. I think he has a great upside. I mean, he's throwing like a pick damn near every game, every other game. But that's expected of a rookie quarterback, especially when you don't have a great offensive line protecting him and no weapons.
So when you talk about the picks, you talk about the turnovers, that is more in your mind on the lack of an offensive – well, on youth, but you were blaming the offensive line.
No, youth and the lack of offensive line.
This is actually back-to-back weeks where I feel like the line was pretty good.
It's the receivers. You got no receivers. Even he talked about it at the end of the game where him and who was it? Keyshawn Booty?
DeMario.
Weren't on the same page. You know, that'll come, I think, ultimately, you know, reading cover
but
two.
He can use his legs, though. So that's another thing. He can get out of a lot of stuff and make up for the lack of protection because he's a good scrambler. You know what I mean? He can use his legs. But I want to go to the defense.
Okay.
Oopsie. See, now that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, as a defense, you take that personally. You can't let two receivers get 100 yards. Yeah. You know what I mean? So somebody is not covering nobody.
Yeah.
They're not tackling either.
They're not tackling. Well, that's been a problem. But when you just let a guy do anything he wants, as he's like, when is somebody Wiggy going to go up there and play bump and run? When is somebody going to go get up in somebody's face and take you right there off the line of scrimmage? I do not see that.
Wiggy doesn't want to hear it. We were, in fact, arguing about it earlier. But isn't that a glaring mistake by Jerod Mayo? Like, isn't when you look at Christian Gonzalez, who has been extraordinary, and you got him out on the boundary and not covering one of those two guys,
see, now that right there, that's you got to blame that on the coach, then, if that's the case, you know what I mean? If he's not going, because I would think the type of talent that Christian Gonzalez, you got to put him on Puka, or you got to put him on Cooper Kupp, and that is your guy, period. You know, he's always on somebody. You don't need him to blitz. I mean, even though he wants to blitz, I always wanted to blitz. I used to go to Belichick all the time. Let me blitz, coach. Let me blitz. Hell no. You get paid to cover.
Well,
you know what I mean?
This is what I had assumed would be Jerod Mayo in his first year as an NFL head coach would be his, his forte.
Right.
Would be that side of the football, and it doesn't seem to be. And so he, when he is on with us like he was yesterday, he kind of explains these things away like, if they had gone differently, it would have been, it would have been a great occurrence. I mean, like, I asked him yesterday about the zero blitz, which was on a second down early in that football game. And he said, well, if there'd been a sack, you would have loved it. But that's not what happened.
No, you, when you do stuff like that early and you know you don't have an abundance of talent, especially in the secondary outside of Christian Gonzalez, you're exposing your other guys when you do a zero blitz. Because when you go after it, those guys are one-on-one. They're exposed. And if you don't have the talent to cover, hey, that's an accident waiting to happen. And it's going to be very fortunate for a receiving core like the Rams and a quarterback like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You give them a – and if they protect it, you know, you're going to lose every time because you don't have that abundance of talent.
Well, unless you have a decent corner that can play man-to-man coverage.
Exactly. But they got one and not using it like that.
Well, the problem I have, because the secondary coming into the season, we were like, should be fine. And I think that, you know, Mayo's probably – like, Bill – that's where I give Bill the edge. But, you know, it's 20-plus or 40 years of, you know, defensive genius versus Mayo, who's really trying to do it for the first time on his own. So there, we can't compare Mayo's defense to Bill Belichick's defense because I think Bill obviously puts up a good game plan. I think more so is your talent you don't have on defense.
That's what I'm saying. So Bill had talent because in certain situations, and if you know your talent, Bill's not going to call that in that situation knowing that he ain't got no coverage right there. You know what I mean? Don't call the zero. You try to protect guys. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, if someone was hurt, Bill would always try to protect the other guy and not expect him to do the same thing. Like if I went down, until you prove yourself, he wouldn't expect you to go out there and do the same thing that I was assigned to do. You know what I mean? So my backup, that's why you're my backup.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you're supposed to coach in that aspect until they get comfortable enough to do so and go out there and hold it down on their own.
Right. And I mean, Jonathan Jones gets cooked, and you're not you would expect he's a guy that's been around for a while, and you would think, okay, he would have had a better opportunity. I understand he's on an island there, but if you look at it, all Cooper Kupp does is run a really a skinny post, and he's what seven yards off.
And it wasn't a great route.
No,
Jones wasn't
great.
Happy with how he handled that though. He wished he could take that one
right.
back.
Because if you look at the rest of the receivers, that you know, I'm kind of just looking at it. They're all in pretty good coverage, except for he's outside leverage on a guy who's running a like you said a lazy skinny post. And if you're not there, they don't get to him in time. It's you know Cooper Kupp sitting his head on the goalpost. I wonder like I get the defensive element and their thing is Gerard's thing is it's more the injuries, but they're just too inconsistent. Like you look at them and they're like, all right, it's one good game and then they have a really bad game. They're just this defense has been inconsistent all year long.
There's a lot of pieces that they need to put in place to be competitive, you know, both offensively and defensively. Mm-hmm. So what is going to be the priority come draft time?
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see what that priority is going to be, whether it's going to be offensive lineman, was it going to be a receiver to give him, give the quarterback of the future some help? Is it going to be some defensive players?
Where would you put it?
I think with May, you got to give him some more options. You got to give him, you know, and I think Stevenson is a decent running back, serviceable for sure. But give him somebody on the outside because the way he can extend plays and use his legs, you got to give him a receiver to at least put fear in somebody else. I can't run and I ain't afraid of none of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I go out there 1-on-1 and might win one Wiggy on 7-on-7 right now. You know what I mean?
I mean, really, like, Bourne is the – I mean, is really the – is there anybody else that you would
– No, I wouldn't keep anybody, but I think we might be
Polk has more penalties than he has receptions.
Yeah, I don't
– Penalties?
He's got four penalties and three catches.
Right. Jumping off sides. Yeah, he's just like he's always doing something. See? But I think the thing that we might be missing is we're always talking about the offense, and I've said this. Hunter Henry is decent. You know, I think you can, you know, the past couple of weeks, the O-line, you said it, Greg, and you're right. Not bad. You just brought it up, Ty. Ramondre Stevenson is serviceable. You could probably find somebody. The Gibson kid's not bad. You're missing that number one on offense, but I think your bigger issue is defensively, you might really be, you should be, you know what I'm doing? Because this team cannot get to the quarterback. I'm seeing what's going on with Max Crosby in Vegas? Like, I'm looking to, you know, we always talk about trade for this guy and trade for that guy. We might have to start looking at guys up front that can get to the quarterback and make things easier for those guys in the back end.
When you elevate Gerard Mayo, how is the defense not the best side of the football on this team?
Because you don't have the talent.
You ain't got, it's not okay, there, Greg. I'm trying to tell you.
We talked about going into the season. We talked about last season, top 10 defense.
Bill was the head of that defense. Completely different.
Okay.
Different scheme.
So
and some guys gone too, right?
Point, yeah. You, at some point, you have to question Gerard Mayo.
Oh, I'm not questioning.
I mean, he's in denial, it seems like, sometimes when he's on this radio show.
Yeah.
I would also just offer, Greg, that the Patriots got relatively fortunate in the quarterbacks they faced last year. They faced a lot of backups. Like this year, they've had two Aaron Rodgers opponents. They've had Joe Burrow. They've had Matthew Stafford, who played at an elite level. Trevor Lawrence, say what you want about him. First pick in the draft. They haven't had as easy of a road against quarterbacks in their season to this point. That's been a big difference.
I mean, I don't think Aaron Rodgers, he ain't Aaron looking like Aaron Rodgers.
The only good game that Aaron Rodgers played was against your sad football team.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, entering the year, you all thought that the Jets were going to dominate with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, but you were right about that. But Ty will tell you, when you look at this team, you're supposed to have somebody at every level where you're like, especially on defense, like, all right, we need to know where this guy is. I give you Barmore, but he's dealing with the injury. And he's the guy who led your team in sacks last year. There's no way your interior defensive lineman should lead in your team in sacks unless it's Aaron Donald. Then you look at your corner. Christian Gonzalez, I think, is good.
I mean, Duggar was back and missed a tackle on Sunday.
You got no edge, guys.
Everybody's going to miss a tackle. You're going to give up a play here and there. I know.
Well, it's
glaring
the way they missed them, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. It's I say just the fundamentals. I say old school Oklahoma drill, Wiggy. I don't know. But people don't tackle no more in practice, Greg, because it's like it's
But it looks
crazy.
Like they give up out there. Like it looks like they stop running when they're trying to
because
go.
Because it's not normal, Coco. They're not tackling because they're protecting the players so they can go out there and play the game. But if you don't practice tackling, if you don't do those type of drills, how are you going to perform them in games? Mm. You know what I mean? That's just what it is. And I get the whole thing of, you know, you want to play on Sunday and protect players, but when you put a product out there that is not fun to watch, that is not good football, you might need to reconsider that and change some things. You know what I mean? We had to practice every day, tackle, and you just need to be healthy enough to play the game.
And I would just – this is the quarterbacks last year. They had Tommy Cutlets. They had Sam Howell. They had Ellinger. They had Derek Carr, who stinks. They had Zach Wilson twice instead of – Aaron Rodgers, they had the guy with the small hands with the Steelers. Not exactly the murderer's row of quarterbacks.
That's a good take right there.
And the other thing I look at is they have what? They're 3-8 over the – that's their record. That's what? What is that, 11 games?
11, yeah.
11 games. Your number one sack getter is Dedrick Wise with 5 through 11 games. Ty will tell you, as a defensive guy – when you got a guy that can get to the quarterback consistently and as is an animal where you have to game plan for, you might have lost a lot with Matt Judon. I know he's struggling in Atlanta, and I like the third round pick you got from him, but no one has stepped up in his place. I thought it was
had 9 sacks the week prior.
But if you look at the 9 sacks, 3 of them came off of blitzes.
Judon is struggling down there.
Yeah, I think he's not doing great down there. But if you look at that, how many of those sacks? Schooler had a sack that came off of a blitz. The what's his name? Petrus. He had a sack that came off
Pettis.
Pettis, excuse me, that came off a blitz. Jelani Tavai's sack came off a blitz when he was the inside linebacker. So when you start to think about sacks, yes, you have to manufacture them when you don't have a guy like a Bosa, Max Crosby, a Myles Garrett, where you can just say, all right, go get him, dog. You don't have that. And Ty will tell you how much help it helps out in the back end.
It helps out a lot. But if you think about the way we played as well, Wiggy, we didn't have anybody to just go get them because they had so many responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So if you compare our teams with the names and some of the guys that's on this team right now, you can just go by position defensively. We got Willie McGinnis out there, Richard Seymour, you know, Bobby Hamilton, Ted Washington. Then you got Mike Vrabel, Roman Pfeiffer, Teddy Bruschi, you know, Rodney Harrison, Ty Law, Lori Malloy. You sit there looking, talk about these type of names and this type of talent. Yeah. It is different when you look around and you see this team right now. Who is they? Mike Vrabel. Who is there? Willie McGinnis. Who is there? Teddy Bruschi. Who is Richard Seymour on this team? So that's what I'm talking about, talent. I don't give a damn how good you think you are as a coach. Yeah. If you don't have the talent, you're not going to be too successful.
Yeah, but was Ted Washington the scariest teammate you ever had? Because he was terrified.
You know what? He was terrified to look at, but he was the nicest, you know, funniest, silliest dude, you know, ever. You know what I mean? He's not – he wasn't – aggressive at all.
Was
you know,
he as when big it,
when
as
it's like
Wilford?
In the locker room.
He was
and
way bigger than Wilford.
Bigger than Wilford?
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
He
oh,
was
way,
big.
Way bigger than Wilford.
Like width?
Width, height, yep. everything. That thing was, he was an absolute mop.
But
you know.
He was like a gentle giant when it comes to the locker room and being around the guys, though. You know what I mean?
We got
to
take a quick break. Ty Law is here. It is a Ty Tuesday, and we will be right back with Ty. It's a Ty Tuesday, the Pro Football Hall of Famer Ty Law here. And in Chiefs will not go undefeated. In the modern era, I mean 17 games, they're you know, I think they want to go to 18. Will there ever be an undefeated NFL football team in your mind?
I don't think it'll be one simply because if you are that team and you're going to want to, you want to win a Super Bowl. I know I said it like a week or so ago. Once you get that far down the line in the season, why risk your starters to try to go undefeated in because of injury? This is football. Injuries can happen at any time, so you don't want to risk, you know, your top players to go out there because guess what? That team that you're playing, they know you're trying to go be undefeated too. They say, okay, you want to play him? Okay, we're going to go hard. You know what I mean? So if I'm going home, damn it, you going home. And no one – is I'm telling you, around the league, people love to play spoiler. Am I right?
Oh, you're right.
If we ain't going to playoffs, damn it, we going to make it hard on you. You ain't going. Right. Or I'm going to knock somebody the hell out. You know what I mean? So that's just the hate that be going on, and that's just the competitive nature of the NFL. So I don't think that it's going to be that easy for somebody to go undefeated.
Is that a big change, though, from now to when you guys were playing, where they didn't rest guys as much or they had guys sit because they were worried about injury?
That was still something that was a real thing back then.
I guess because that's where my mind would go is that at the end of a season, if you're undefeated and you don't want to risk injury when it comes to your stars, you're going to put out a worse team out there. So if that's not the change, then it's just what is it?
It's too hard. It's really, really too hard because you're every week you're gonna get somebody's best shot, and all it takes is a couple turnovers, or your offense doesn't come out like it's supposed to, or your defense comes out and gives up a couple plays, and now you know that you're undefeated. I mean, you as a player, you know, I think Teddy Bruschi talked about it, like they thought about, like, what we're undefeated. So now every game you're looking up at the scoreboard like, oh, wait a second, what are we going to do here? And it's just a very, very difficult thing to do.
I mean, certainly Bills have the advantage when it comes to the regular season, but Patrick Mahomes has the advantage in the playoffs. So.
Right. Ty, when you were watching the 07 Patriots, were you, like, kind of rooting against it because you weren't there? Did you have any FOMO? Like, where were you in Glendale for that Super Bowl?
No, I mean, because they were still my guys. It was home for me at the end of the day. So, I mean, it was no hate or no animosity.
Were you at the game?
You know, yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I was there, man. So, you know, a lot of people, I mean, it was funny. People asked me that question. That was like, those are still my guys. I played with them longer than anything. And I understand it's a business at the end of the day. And it was a business decision that the Patriots made when it comes to the contract. But I had no animosity against those guys.
Were you rooting for the Pats when you were playing against them in the Super Bowl?
I was always a Pats fan.
Greg, that's the worst night, drunken moron related of my life. There's no kick in the pants like that.
No.
There will never be a feeling of just abject misery.
Well, because they led you to expect it every single time that they just – it was expected that they were going to win the Super Bowl.
Oh, you thought – and then once Moss caught that touchdown, you were like, all right, perfect. But the greatest mind of all time decides to leave Ellis Hobbs on an island against a guy who's 6'5".
I don't get that one.
You talking about Gerard Mayo zero blitzing. Yeah. You zero blitzing on the 6-yard line going up against Plax, and all he does is catch jump balls.
But everybody know where it was going. I always say, and I tease my – my little brother, Asante, about that, because like I said, he has Hall of Fame numbers. I'm going to put that out there right now as far as Asante Samuel's numbers. But
he's a Hall of Fame dink also.
I was like I'm the type of guy that's like, if I'd have seen Ellis, if I was on that team.
Get on the other side.
Get your ass over here, man. You move. You know what I mean? That's how I was.
Right.
Because everyone knew where the ball was going. It's the red zone. He's 6'5". So, you know, whoever is the leader of that secondary.
Right.
Needs to go over there, or the safety, whoever is there.
Right.
He's like, hey, son, you go over here, because at the time he was the guy. But I'm just saying, I would have took it personally, and I don't care what was called.
Right.
I don't give a damn what Bill called. Hey, Ellis, here, we'll deal with this on the sideline. You got to go. I'm going over here. And so that's the type of leadership that we had on our teams, and I think that was a huge mistake by leaving Ellis Hobbs out there.
That was
the play of the game.
If you really want to have a bad day, watch the pass Brady has after the touchdown with like 5 seconds left. They do the rollout,
and he
throws it. And I kid you not, it's an inch away from the greatest play in sports history, a walk-off touchdown pass to Randy Moss.
Yeah.
And it was
What happened?
It was like a rollout throwback, and Moss was running
just
like a
off
deep
the
post.
Like right in front of the fingertips, almost a catch.
Wow.
Would have been a touchdown, game over.
Yeah, but it was just, you looked at that game, and you were just like, you know, obviously, I've been on losing ends of Super Bowls where we lost to the Patriots in 03 when I was at Carolina. And it's so different because you're remembering about like, oh, what we could have did.
Yep.
Yeah, what we should have did. So to be, what were they, 17-0, whatever they were, right? 18-0. And knowing like, all right, like I think if you would have asked Bill, honestly, sit down, what's the one defensive play call you most regret more than anything?
You think that would be it?
Because like even Ty said, everybody knew what the Giants were going to do. Your one-on-one backside with Plaxico, everybody knew except for Bill. Like, what makes Bill go, all right, we're going to leave Ellis Hobbs on an island?
No, it's not that. Ellis Hobbs should have known that. I sit there to watch the coverage that he played. It's like, as soon as the ball snapped, just run to the damn corner. Because you know that's where he's going. That guy, that was the worst move I ever seen in my life. I wouldn't have failed for that with my eyes closed. You know, I'm like, do you see that little stick into the corner? That man, that was a terrible ass
route. But some people are not talented enough to make that play. So it's your job as a coach to maybe not put my guy or say, hey, Sante, you go wherever Plax goes.
Hey, but as a defensive back, at some point, you can't get beat deep. You're already down there. So you got the sideline and you got the back of the end zone who's the best defender of all time, the greatest.
Right.
Because they ain't never missed a tackle. You know, that's what it is. So take that chance. You sit there and go for the ball. Now, he could have jumped up over you. I still say put your best player there, which was Asante Samuel. You know, at the time is the corner.
Mm-hmm.
But Ellis Hobbs, you knew where it was going. Bill knew it was going. But at some point, you got to just go out there and make a play. You got to go out there and compete. So I don't totally blame Bill. I blame more of the people out there on the field, because I was on part of defenses, Greg, that we didn't give a damn what Bill said. We didn't give a damn what Rack said. We didn't give a damn what none of them said. We're going to do what we're going to do, and we'll deal with it when we get to the sideline. You know what I mean? That's just what it was.
Yeah. All right, Ty Law's here. When we come back, we will get to the most entertaining play of the game and more with Ty Law.
Real quick, Dan Orlovsky tweeted out this morning, and I didn't hear Shime read it initially, but I guess neither did Courtney, and she reread it later on in the program.
Okay.
And step right into a trap. I like Wiggy's point was, hey, the audience turns over every 15 minutes.
No doubt.
So you gotta hammer that home.
Yep.
So we're going to do that again.
Okay.
Dan Orlovsky tweeted out this morning, Drake May has been, all caps, way more precise than I expected. Well, we know that, actually.
You didn't want to play him. You didn't want to play him at all this year.
The most true thing you said.
Way more than you expected.
Oh, he's better than you thought?
Yeah,
wow, weird. He's the only qualified quarterback who's been off target on less than 10% of his throws this season. This is the stat we read yesterday from Mike Reese. He had two misses on 64 throws in his last two games. Snipering. Fire emojis.
Snipering.
Snipering.
Yeah, he's been awesome. And it's also Dan Orlovsky. It's not Michael Winslow from the Police Academy.
I know that can be very confusing.
Dan Orlovsky. Think about how good Drake May's stats would be if he had guys who could catch. If Kayshon Boutte could squeeze a pass, or Jalen Polk could squeeze a pass,
his numbers would be off the charts. Oh. Now, this number obviously doesn't worry about drops.
The throws are still on
how
target.
How accurate he is. I'm just saying, but his like completion percentage, which is already good, it was great last week, his yards, all that, it would be so much better if he had real receivers.
Snipering, Nick. How do you feel about that?
Is that a word? Is snipering a word?
Snipering.
It'd either be sniper or sniping.
Yeah, I think
it's not sniping.
I think Nick is right. I think sniping. I think it's sniping. He's sniping.
Is that what the kids say in like Call of Duty? We have to ask Wiggy. Are they snipering?
Is that what
they sniping?
Yeah, I don't know. 7-year-old would say it.
You think Wiggy's the one to ask on this?
Wiggy would know.
An authority on words.
That's right.
Yeah.
Words. Well,
a word expert.
Call of Duty.
Yeah.
All right. There's some snipering going on in that game. Sniping. Snipering.
Okay. Snipering.
Sniping.
But you know, all quibbling aside,
I don't know, Nick. I'll be honest.
Oh, you're on. Are you Team Orlovsky on this one?
I'm gonna check that out.
Team Dan Orlovsky.
Bing.
First time Keith's been pro Orlovsky. Snipering. Says Dan Orlovsky.
Snipering.
Okay.
Urban Dictionary.
Yep, yeah.
Says when two people participate in an attack where they sneak up behind an unsuspecting victim.
I was very worried about where that was
and
going.
One
actually.
Person holds the victim's arms while the other blah 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 blah. Oop, look out.
Blah 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 blah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I can read this.
Okay.
When
it's not a sex act.
No, it's not. Okay. I had to stop. I was like, wait. I was like, this could really turn on us. No, snipering. This is what happens when you just read stuff for the first time out loud on the radio. Snipering. When two people participate in an attack where they sneak up behind an unsuspecting victim and one person holds the victim's arms while the other plugs the victim's nose and forces a shot of alcohol down their throat.
That's not
it. Snipering.
That's not it.
That's what it says. Well, so then, that's what Orlovsky's
talking about. Orlovsky used it incorrectly.
That's
true.
Yeah, I don't think that's what he meant.
617-779-7937. We played you Sean McVay earlier in the week. Very complimentary.
Loves him.
Of Drake May. How about Mike McDaniel? I'm not going to make anybody else do what I did yesterday and listen to 20-plus minutes of Mike McDaniel stammering and
just the highlights,
trying to crack unfunny jokes. I'm not going to subject you to 20 minutes of that. Oh, it kind of sounds like you. I'm subjected to 4 hours of it every day, Jones.
Touche.
This is what Mike McDaniel had to say yesterday about Drake May.
I saw a true quarterback who has the ability to gain the confidence of his teammates and lead and orchestrate an offense. I saw a guy that can make plays in a multitude of ways. I think, the Patriots are kind of feeling that. Right now where he's, a guy that can see down the field, can play fearlessly in the pocket and make every throw with the arm strength to do it, but then also is a very good athlete that has some juice and can make plays off schedule. And I think that's been a huge bonus to their offense as of late, that had some explosive plays. Whether he threw it outside the pocket or he scrambled outside the pocket. And he's a guy that you expect to, continue to get better and is impressive. It's always impressive when rookie quarterbacks make plays on the NFL level just because there's a lot coming at them. They just learned the foreign language like a handful of months ago and are doing it in live action with guys that are trying to inflict pain on you. I think it's a credit to him and his preparation and the coaching staff as well.
It's a man who commands a room. I don't see how that guy could possibly lose his locker room.
I didn't know he was such an guy because I've heard him before.
20 minutes of that.
Well, now I know why it's 20 minutes.
22.
Well, it's really 12 minutes, but then it's ums and ahs for 10. That the whole time. I couldn't believe that. That's
You know who couldn't believe it? Me. I couldn't believe it when I listened to it yesterday.
Like, what is he doing? Like, he's falling asleep then? Did he take a drink at one point?
How on earth could that guy lose a locker room? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, okay, but
he's also the guy. Did you watch that special on him, like, before the season started, I believe? Maybe it was just like a SportsCenter special. It wasn't like a 30 for 30 or anything, but it was like a profile piece on Mike McDaniel. He's one of these guys. And I don't know if this helps. Maybe there are people out there in the world that do this, and it does help. He's up at like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. He's got like a Mark Wahlberg schedule.
I was just going to say that. He's a Wahlberg?
Yeah, so he drives in. It's pitch black at night.
Yeah.
First guy in there. Then he's like going through all his like trapper keepers.
Do you believe that's what he does? Or maybe did he just do it for the cameras?
Maybe. But like what a reckless, lifestyle. Like, I would get in there at like 3 a.m. It's like, why? You do need sleep at some point.
Oh, sleep's overrated.
Yeah, you need some sleep. You need some sleep. Trust me, as somebody that gets it every other night,
I know what we're really talking about right now. We're no longer talking about Mike McDaniel. No. I know what we're talking about.
Now, this is very close to home. This is in my home. I just want to sleep. That's all I want to do. Can't.
So in there, though, were some compliments for Drake May. He's high on Drake May. Sean McVay is high on McVay and on May, rather. And here's what I would say. That's 2 weeks in a row. Guys that are deemed offensive guru, quarterback guru types are giving high praise to Drake May. That's all I would say.
100%. I think everybody around the league is seeing it. You know, I know Bill Belichick might go the other way at times. And some of the people that are anti-Drake May are going to be a little bit more dug in on it. Like, that's just the nature of it. If you don't like a guy coming out of the draft, they basically need to be the MVP for you to be like, maybe I was wrong. Like, you're going to kind of stick with what your thought was, especially early in his career. But yeah, that is over-the-top high praise. And it's funny, because Sean McVay's came post-game, which I even take more stock
into. No, me too. It's like, we just got off the field, that guy's a stud.
Right.
Like,
you don't need to prop up your opponent.
You're not gassing up the other team. Right, right.
Yeah, like, right now, Mike McDaniel's not going to say he's bad, but he also didn't just, I mean, he comically did not stop short. He continued to talk and talk and talk. But it wasn't, remember we used to always point out Bill Belichick and how there were tells when he didn't think the other quarterback was very good. Yep. He had these certain... it might have been Andrew Callahan. Somebody was all over it with the...
It was. Makes all the throws.
He can make
Callahan.
All the throws, which is just like Zach Wilson can make all the throws.
Mm-hmm.
Does he make them well? No, but he can make them. He would say these things that sounded like compliments that really weren't. Whereas if you listen to that, I'm not asking you to listen to it again, but
please
if you listen
don't.
To Mike McDaniel...
come on. 22 minutes of that.
Bonus so the
is this the whole press conference or just that answer?
I think
that was one answer. There were 17 instances of ums not attached to words.
I can't.
So
in a minute and 35 seconds.
You know what? I would not replace Gerard Mayo with that guy. Actually, I take that back.
He did allude to the fact that how important it is for a quarterback to lead the team, right? Sort of a simple thing, but he's not just sticking to, you could talk about Drake May complimentary and not really even believe it. You could, oh, the guy can run. Yeah, he ran for 95 yards in the Tennessee game. So you can be like, oh, he can beat you with his feet. He's got a good arm and, like, you know, he's a rookie. He's got a lot of potential. Yeah, he's 22. You know, he's 6'4". It's like, you could talk about, like, physical characteristics, but he was also getting into him just leading an offense and, like, getting better as he's been out there, and also how excited New England should be to have him. So, yeah, all that, you take all the ums and ahs out of there, it is good stuff.
Do you think Jalen Waddle, and this is where I really wanted to go, we got sidetracked with McDaniel sucking all the air out of the room.
Yeah.
Jalen Waddle, do you think, A, he becomes available this offseason? He has 33 catches for 404 yards, one touchdown. His first 3 years, he was a 1,000-yard guy. His first year, he was a 100-catch guy before Tyreek Hill. He's making 20-ish. Million dollars a year going forward. Is Jalen Waddle a name we need to add to the list with T. Higgins, who's a free agent, and then some of the trade candidates? Deebo Samuel, DK Metcalf, Jalen Waddle. Is he on that list?
So unlike T. Higgins, he does have his money. He got a massive contract. So they paid both Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. And this will be one, I think, only if he kind of gets pissed about the ball getting his way, which this year he is on pace for career lows across the board.
Yeah.
Catches, touchdowns, yards, all of it. It is amazing. You know, his second year in the league, 1,300 yards. He had 8 touchdowns, and he averaged over 18 yards a catch. The guy was a big play machine. And now this year, and only part of it is the quarterback. What, did Tua miss 4 full games, I think?
Something like that, yeah.
So, like, there's been, Tua's been out there for more than half the games. And yeah, he's been bad. But so I think what you have to look to is he going to kind of shoot his way out of
full
town?
Games is right.
And if he does, it goes back to the thing, does Miami want to trade him in the division? They should just get the best thing for him. But it might be, if Waddle's truly available, there'll be a few teams calling and they might just ship him to the NFC.
That might be the bigger hurdle.
Yep.
Fair.
ESPN's Adam Schefter is brought to you by Liberty Bank and by Coleman. It's electric. Adam Schefter, how are we doing today?
Gentlemen, what is going on today?
You tell us, man. You're the guy with the stories. That was, as you know, obviously, we saw you correcting the record on Twitter. A viral piece of content with you on a podcast has been going around about the strangest place that you've ever broken a story. We found out it was post-coitus. Now, the big question that I have about this, Schefter, and we will get to NFL questions maybe if we have time at the end of all of this once I'm done with my line of questioning, is did you get the scoop in the middle of the act and then tweeted it afterwards, or was it all after the fact?
Well, first of all, I am completely shocked that this has taken on the life that it has. Like, I believe all day long I've been responding to texts about this, including one of my wife this afternoon. my wife didn't appreciate the story as much as other people, I should point that out.
Strangest thing.
Some people enjoyed it. Some people enjoyed it. My wife, not as much. Not as much. Yeah. You know, again, I don't know what to say. I mean, what do you want me to say?
Well, I was just interested in the timeline because it's like that's obviously a great story.
I said what I said, right?
Yes. Yep. So let me take it in a little different direction. Is there an Adam Schefter book to be written about these types of things? Maybe not this specific detail, just the stories that you have to tell over the years of just crazy places, crazy things, and all of that. Is that in the offing?
Well, not to rat anybody out, but like even afterwards, Jay Glazer was texting me about a time that he broke a story and the details that was going on with that, and I'll let him share his story. But it involved a model and a big story.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, you know, look, I always say this, and it's really true, whether it's talking about this or anything else. Coaches remember plays of games, all the details surrounding a play, the play call, how much time was left, and reporters remember stories. And I can tell you the story behind almost every story. Because there's always a story behind the story. It's never just something that's simple. There's always a story behind the story, and maybe that is a book one day, the story behind the story. It would be interesting to see some of the things that have happened over time with various stories, including this particular one that I talked about, Kevin Clark's show, which, again, I didn't realize would captivate the country and go viral the way it did, but it did. Yeah, I mean, that's the deal. The stories behind the stories are more interesting than the stories themselves.
So just to maybe close this up, do you have a nice couch and will you be sleeping on it?
I got a great couch in my office, my home office, and it's looking very cozy.
Yeah, well, you got to have to do it. And by the way, I think the reason why this went so viral, Adam, is because people think of you almost as not even like a guy. Like,
Information
robot, basically. Yeah, right. Like, people turn to you for the info. And I think at some point, like, when you are as successful as you are, it almost dehumanizes you. So this was a very human look into the world of Adam Schefter that I feel like we don't get all that often. I know you wrote a book in 2018, but in general, I feel like we don't get a lot of personal stories from Adam Schefter.
Well, I'll say this, that newsflash again, information robots have feelings.
Very good. Now, Adam, yesterday the Bruins coach got fired, Jim Montgomery, and our own Rich Keefe ended up breaking the story right here on these airwaves, and a lot of people doubted him, and I was wondering, at what point in your career did people stop, like, doubting you? I know some people still might, but in general, you're looked at as the standard bearer of all the scoops, and you're not wrong, and this is, you know, you're the guy that people look to. When do you think you kind of crossed over into that status?
I have no clue. I appreciate the kind words. That's very nice of you to say. I know that I've enjoyed over time the number of instances when I would report something and people would say something and doubt it, and then it turned out to be right. Like that, that's always, you know, it's like an athlete being called out. You know, he can't do it, or he's not going to be picked high, or can't get the job done, or he's not good enough to start, or it's the same thing. Like, again, we're human beings. And so there have been enough instances over time, which I'll save for the book, The Stories Behind the Stories, because there are enough of those that I can think of right off the top of my head. And you remember those things too. And so, that's the deal. Like anybody in any line of work that is called out, challenged, always wants to perform at an optimal level, and information robots are no different.
So let's get to the here and the now and some information you might have. What is going to happen with the Cincinnati Bengals wide receivers? Because here in New England, we've been talking about T. Higgins as a possible option for seems like a year and a half now. So how do you think, because Ja'Marr Chase also seems a little annoyed at times, how do you think things play out in Cincy with those two guys?
It's pretty simple. T. Higgins is a free agent. He gets to walk away from Cincinnati after the season. They can't tag him. They can't afford to tag him. So he gets to hit the free agent market and become an incredibly high-paid receiver. And if New England wants him, I think New England will have a real chance to get him. All you have to do, very simple, write a check, write a big check. And T. Higgins is going to, I believe, break the bank in free agency. He's going to crush it as a wide receiver. He might be the top free agent out there this upcoming winter. There are enough teams that need wide receivers, and somebody's going to pay him, and somebody's going to pay him a lot of money.
Well, I hope it's the Patriots. It seems like in the AFC East, Adam, that the Jets are just having a full factory reset right now. Woody Johnson is just going completely rogue. Is there a possibility that maybe some of those players, if they go the full, you know, full enema over there, is there a possibility maybe some of those guys could shake loose?
Well, who do you want there?
I want Garrett Wilson.
Well, the issue with that would be that they're not cutting Garrett Wilson. That Garrett Wilson would be traded.
Right.
And in the event that the Jets ultimately decided that they wanted to trade one of the best young wide receivers in football, my guess would be that they're not going to trade him in the division. It's one thing to decide you're going to trade him, which is hard to imagine, but it's even more incomprehensible that they would think of trading him within the division. So I would not expect that to happen. I think the Patriots would have much better chances at writing a check to T. Higgins than to hold out hope of trading for Garrett Wilson.
Adam, I think last week we asked you about Bill Belichick, and you said you think there's going to be 8-9 jobs available, that he's going to have potentially a pick of his jobs. Is there a chance that he could be competing with one Deion Sanders for a Cowboys opening? That's a headline I think I saw actually on your own network television this morning.
Well, yeah, listen, I think Bill's going to be in demand, and I think Bill's going to be selective, and I think there'll be people that are interested in Deion. And Deion's not going to go for just any job either. So if it just so happens that they're both up for the Cowboys job, I mean, that's not far-fetched to imagine that possibility. Like I said, I don't think if there are 7, 8, 9 openings, which I would expect somewhere between 7 and 9, I think Bill would be in play for any number of them, but I think Bill probably would only choose a couple of them or be willing to go to a couple of them. And same thing with Deion Sanders. So I think people are going to be a little bit careful and selective of where they wind up. And by the way, you don't have to take a job either. If it's not right, there's nothing forcing you to go take a job.
Sure. Adam, before we let you go here, there were reports this week that the Crafts were looking for help to try and develop Drake May, maybe looking outside of the organization. Did you hear anything about that? And what's your general thought on ownership getting involved in something like that? Is there a possibility it could undermine the coaches who are here now?
Well, I've not heard that. I don't know whether there's any validity to that. I think that the Patriots have a tremendous asset on their hands, and it's up to them, however they decide, to surround him with the best players, coaching, talent, whatever it may be. He is their most important asset right now. The future rests with Drake May. So however they feel and however they deem it appropriate to develop Drake May into the top quarterback that he has the chance to become, you do that. Whatever that means, that's up for them to decide.
All right, well, then we'll leave it right there. Adam Schefter, thanks so much for the time today. Thanks so much for sharing your story, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Guys, have a great week. We'll talk next Wednesday.
All right.
Good luck
good.
On the couch.
That is Adam Schefter live from the couch, where he may be for a little while after being in the doghouse with a truly tremendous story that he told on that on that other podcast. We never thought to ask him a question like that. I feel stupid now. But maybe next week. Maybe next week we can get some more details. It's a little too hot right now.
He also may pay the price for that. Because once you answer one of those, people like you, right, host ones are like, oh, what can I ask him if he's willing to ask that?
Well, yeah.
We'll see.
That's where my instincts take me. What am I supposed to not? I'm supposed to ignore that?
He might need to Heisman some of those old Heisman. And put those off. I also think it was funny in there. I was going to ask him, but we kind of went down a different road. You remember when fans realized, like, the Red Sox don't hate the Yankees players, like they're going to dinner?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there's a little bit of that, like, so you don't hate Jay Glazer and Ian Rappaport and those guys? Like, you guys are buddies texting each other even though you're competing for all the same information?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I want them to hate each other. I want him to hate Crap Sheet like I do.
Texting each other sex stories. Great text. It says, that's like when a kid sees a teacher outside of school and it blows their mind that they're real people with their own lives. That is what that's like.
Exactly.
Hearing Adam Schefter like has sex is like exactly that same dynamic. 100%.
It's like in the Santa Claus when he starts dating the principal.
Yep,
his dad starts dating the principal. The kid hates it.
Just like that. All right. This is the guest corner. And that means that Adam Schefter out, Brian Scalabrine in. We'll talk to Scal next.